Chapter 31. Assurances. In a few minutes, Ivan returned.
"You can go ahead, Mr. Salvier," was all he said before he and Tomas both vanished into the brush again, without so much as the rustle of a leaf.
"They are very good," Gaul muttered, still staring around suspiciously.
"A child could hide in this," Chiad told him, slapping a redberry branch.
But she watched the undergrowth as closely as Gaul did. None of the Aiel appeared eager to go on. Not reluctant, precisely, and certainly not afraid, but definitely not eager. One day Perrin hoped to figure out what it was Aiel did feel toward Aes Sedai. One day. He was not particularly enthusiastic himself today.
"Let's go meet these Aes Sedai of yours," he told Mr. Salvier gruffly.
The old sick house was even more ramshackle than he remembered, a sprawling single story that leaned drunkenly, half the rooms open to the sky, a 40-foot sour gum tree poking up from one. The forest closed in on every side. A thick net of vines and briars snaked up the walls, covered the remaining thatch with green. He thought they might be all that was holding the building up. The front door was cleared, though. He smelled horses and a faint aroma of beans and ham, but oddly, no wood smoke. Tying their animals to low branches, they followed Mistress Alvir inside, where vine-shrouded windows admitted only a dim light. The front room was large and bare of furnishings, with dirt in the corners and a few cobwebs that had escaped an obviously hasty cleaning. Four blanket rolls were laid out on the floor, with saddles and saddlebags, and neatly tied bundles against the wall, and a small kettle on the stone hearth gave off the cooking smells despite the lack of any fire. A smaller kettle seemed to be water for tea, almost at the boil. Two Aes Sedai awaited them. Maran Alvir curtsied hastily and launched into an anxious cascade of introductions and explanations. Perrin leaned his chin against his bow. He recognized the Aes Sedai. Varen Mathwin, plump and square-faced, gray streaking her brown hair despite her smooth-cheeked Aes Sedai agelessness, was Brown Aja, and like all Browns, seemingly lost half the time in the search for knowledge, whether old and lost or new. But sometimes her dark eyes belied that vague, dreamy expression, as now, looking past Maran at him, sharp as tacks. She was one of two Aes Sedai, besides Moraine, he was certain knew about Rand, and he suspected she knew more about himself than she let on. Her eyes took on that slight vagueness again as she listened to Maran, but for an instant, they had weighed him on scales, factored him into her own plans. He would have to be very careful around her. The other, a dark, slender woman in a deep green silk riding dress that contrasted sharply with Varen's plain brown, ink-stained at the cuffs, he had never met and only seen once. Alana Mosvani was Green Aja, if he remembered correctly, a beautiful woman with long black hair and penetrating dark eyes. Those eyes sought him, too, while she listened to Maran. Something Egwene had said came back to him.
"Some Aes Sedai who shouldn't know about Rand show too much interest in him. Elida, for instance, and Alana Mosvani. I don't think I trust either of them."
Perhaps it would be best to be guided by Egwene until he found out differently. His ears perked up when Maran said, still apprehensive,
"You are asking about him, Varen Sedai. Perrin, I mean. All three boys, but Perrin among them. It seemed the easiest way to keep him from getting himself killed was to bring him to you. There just wasn't any time to ask first. Do you say you under—"
"It is quite all right, Mistress Alvir," Varen interrupted in a soothing tone. "You did exactly the correct thing. Perrin is in the right hands now. Also, I will enjoy the chance to learn more about the Aiel, and it is always a pleasure to talk with an Ogier. I will pick your brain, Loyal. I have found some fascinating things in Ogier books."
Loyal gave her a pleased smile. Anything to do with books seemed to please him. Gaul, on the other hand, exchanged guarded looks with Bane and Chiad.
"It is all right as long as you do not do it again," Alana said firmly. "Unless you are alone," she asked Perrin in a voice that required an answer, and right now. "Did the other two return as well?"
"Why are you here?" he demanded right back.
"Perrin,"
Mistress Alvear said sharply.
Mind your manners. You may have picked up some rough ways out in the world, but you can just lose them again now that you are home.
Do not trouble yourself, Varen told her. Perrin and I are old friends now. I understand him.
Her dark eyes glittered at him for a moment.
We will take care of him.
Alana's cool words seemed open to interpretation. Varen smiled and patted Marin's shoulder.
You had better get on back to the village. We don't want anyone wondering why you are walking in the woods.
Mistress Alvear nodded. Pausing by Perrin, she put a hand on his arm.
You know you have my sympathy, she said gently. Just remember that getting yourself killed won't help anything. Do what the Aes Sedai tell you.
He mumbled something noncommittal, but it seemed to satisfy her. When Mistress Alvear had gone, Varen said,
You have our sympathy as well, Perrin. If there was anything we could have done, we would have.
He did not want to think of his family now. You still haven't answered my question.
Perrin!
Fael managed to copy Mistress Alvear's tone almost exactly, but he paid it no mind.
Why are you here? It seems awfully coincidental. White cloaks and Trollocs, and the two of you just happen to be here at the same time.
Not coincidental at all, Varen replied.
Ah, the tea water is ready.
The water subsided from a boil as she began to bustle about, tossing a handful of leaves into the kettle, directing Fael to find metal cups in one of the bundles against the wall. Alana, with her arms folded beneath her breasts, never took her eyes off Perrin, their heat conflicting with the coolness of her face.
Year by year, Varen continued, we find fewer and fewer girls who can be taught to channel. Shiryam believes we may have spent the last 3,000 years culling the ability out of humankind by gentling every man who can channel we find. The proof of it, she says, is how very few men we do find. Why, even 100 years ago the records say there were 2 or 3 a year, and 500 years...
Alana harumphed.
What else can we do, Varen? Let them go insane? Follow the White's mad plan?
I think not, Varen replied calmly.
Even if we could find women willing to bear children by gentled men, there is no guarantee the children would be able to channel, or would be girls. I did suggest that if they wanted to increase the stock, Aes Sedai should be the ones to have the children. Themselves, in fact, since they put it forward in the first place. Alviarin was not amused.
She would not be, Alana laughed. The sudden flash of delight breaking her fiery, dark-eyed stare was startling.
I wish I could have seen her face. Her expression was interesting, the brown sister said musingly. Calm yourself, Perrin. I will give you the rest of your answer. Tea?
Trying to wipe the glare from his face, somehow he found himself seated on the floor, his bow beside him, and a metal cup full of strong tea in his hand. Everyone sat in a circle in the middle of the room. Alana took up the explanation of their presence, perhaps to forestall the other Aes Sedai's tendency to ramble.
Here in the Two Rivers, where I suspect no Aes Sedai had visited in 1,000 years, Moraine found 2 women who could not only be taught to channel, but who had the ability born in them, and heard of another who had died because she could not teach herself. Not to mention 3 Tavirin, Varen muttered into her tea. Do you have any idea, Alana went on, how many towns and villages we usually must visit to find 3 girls with the ability inborn? The only wonder is that it took us so long to come hunting more. The old blood is very strong here in the Two Rivers. We were only in Watch Hill a week before the children appeared, and were very careful not to reveal who we were to any but the women's circle there. Yet even so, we found 4 girls who can be trained, and 1 child, I think, has the ability inborn.
It was difficult to be sure, Varen added. She is only 12. None have anywhere near the potential of Egwene or Nynaeve, but the number is still nothing less than remarkable. There might be another 2 or 3 just around Watch Hill. We have had no chance to examine girls here or farther south. Tarin Ferry was a disappointment, I must say. Too much interchange of bloodlines with the outside, I suppose.
Perrin had to admit it made sense. but it did not answer all his questions or settle all his doubts. He shifted, stretching out his leg. The spear wound in his thigh hurt.
I don't understand why you are hiding here. White cloaks arresting innocent people, and here you sit. Trollocs running all over the two rivers, apparently, and here you sit.
Loyal muttered under his breath, a muted rumble. Perrin caught angering Aes Sedai and Hornet's Nest, but he continued to hammer at them.
Why aren't you doing something? You're Aes Sedai. Burmy, why aren't you doing something? Perrin!
Fael hissed, before turning an apologetic smile to Varen and Alana.
Please forgive him. Moraine Sedai spoiled him. She has an easy manner, I suppose, and she let him get away with things. Please don't be angry with him. He will do better.
She shot him a sharp look, indicating she meant that for his ears as much as theirs, or more. He gave her a piece of his glower. She had no right interfering in this.
An easy manner, Varen said, blinking. Moraine, I never noticed.
Alana waved Fael to silence.
You certainly do not understand, the Aes Sedai told Perrin in a tight voice. You do not understand the restrictions under which we labor. The three oaths are not merely words. I brought two warders with me to this place.
The Greens were the only Aja to bond more than a single warder apiece. A few, he had heard, even had three or four.
The children caught Owen crossing an open field. I felt every arrow that struck him until he died. I felt him die. Had I been there, I could have defended him and myself with the power. But I cannot use it for revenge. The oaths do not permit it. The children are very nearly as vile as men can be, short of dark friends. But they are not dark friends, and for that reason they are safe from the power except in self-defense. Stretch that as far as we can, it will only stretch so far.
As for Trollocs, Varen added, we have done for a number of them, and to Murdral. But there are limits. Halfmen can sense channeling after a fashion. If we manage to draw 100 Trollocs down on ourselves, there is very little we can do except run.
Varen scratched at his beard. He should have expected this, should have known. He had seen Moraine face Trollocs, and he had some idea of what she could do and what not. He realized he had been thinking of how Rand had killed all the Trollocs in the stone. Only Rand was stronger than either of these Aes Sedai, probably stronger than both together. Well, whether they helped him or not, he still meant to finish every Trolloc in the two rivers. After he rescued Matt's family and the Luhans. If he thought about it carefully enough, he had to find a way. His thigh ached miserably.
You are injured.
Setting her cup on the floor, Alana came across to kneel beside him and take his head in her hands. A tingle ran through him.
Yes, I see. You did not do this to yourself shaving, it appears.
It was the Trollocs, Aes Sedai, Bane said. When we came out of the ways in the mountains.
Chiad touched her arm and she stopped.
I locked the way gate, Loyal added quickly. No one will use it until it is opened from this side.
I thought that must be how they were coming, Varen murmured, half to herself. Moraine did say they were using the ways. Sooner or later, that is going to present us with a real problem.
Varen wondered what she thought that was.
The ways, Alana said, still holding his head. Tavirin, young heroes.
She made the words sound approving and close to a curse, both together.
I am not a hero, he told her stolidly. The ways were the fastest way to get here, that's all.
The Green Sister went on as if he had not spoken.
I will never understand why the Ammerlin Seat let you three go your way. Elida has been having fits over you three, and she is not the only one, just the most vehement. With the seals weakening and the last battle coming, the last thing we need is three Tavirin running about loose. I would have tied a string to each of you, even bonded you.
He tried to pull back, but she tightened her grip and smiled.
I am not so lost to custom yet as to bond a man against his will. Not quite yet.
He was not sure how far from it she was. The smile did not reach her eyes. She fingered the half-healed cut on his cheek. This has gone too long since it was done. Even healing will leave a scar now.
I don't need to be pretty, he muttered, just well enough to do what he had to do. And Fael laughed aloud.
Who told you that?
Fael said.
Surprisingly, she shared a smile with Alana.
Perrin frowned, wondering if they were making fun of him.
But before he could say anything, the healing hit him, like being turned to ice. All he could do was gasp.
The few moments before Alana released him seemed endless. When he had his breath again, the Green Sister had Bane's flame-haired head between her hands. Varen was seeing to Gaul, and Chiad was testing her left arm, swinging it back and forth with a satisfied expression. Fael took Alana's place beside Perrin and stroked a finger across his cheek, along the scar beneath his eye.
A beauty mark, she said, smiling slightly.
A what?
Oh, just something Domani women do. It was just an idle comment.
Despite her smile, or maybe because of it, he scowled suspiciously. She was making fun of him, only he did not understand how exactly.
Ivan slipped into the room, whispered in Alana's ear, and vanished outside again at her whisper. He hardly made a sound, even on the wooden floor.
A few moments later, the scrape of boots on the steps announced new arrivals. Perrin sprang to his feet as Tamal Thor and Abel Cawthon appeared in the doorway, bows in hand, with the rumpled clothes and gray-flecked two-day beards of men who had been sleeping rough. They had been hunting. Four rabbits hung at Tam's belt, three at Abel's. It was obvious they were expecting the Aes Sedai, and visitors too, but they stared in amazement at Loyal, more than half again as tall as either of them, with his tufted ears and broad snout of a nose. A flicker of recognition crossed Tam's bluff-lined face at the sight of the Aiel. Tam's gaze only rested thoughtfully on them for a moment, though, before coming to rest on Perrin, with a start almost as big as for Loyal. He was a sturdy, deep-chested man, despite hair that was nearly all gray, the sort it would take an earthquake to knock off his feet, and more than that, to fluster.
"Perrin, lad," he exclaimed. "Is Rand with you?" "What about Matt?"
Abel added eagerly.
He had the look of an older, graying Matt, but with more serious eyes. A man not thickened much by age, with an agile step.
"They are well," Perrin told them. "In Tyr."
He caught Varen's glance from the corner of his eye. She knew very well what Tyr meant for Rand. Alana hardly seemed to be paying attention at all.
"They would have come with me, but we didn't know how bad things are."
That was true on both counts, he was sure.
"Matt spends his time dicing, and winning, and kissing the girls. Rand? Well, the last I saw of Rand, he was wearing a fancy coat and had a pretty golden-haired girl on his arm."
"That sounds like Matt," Abel chuckled.
"Maybe it's as well they didn't come," Tam said more slowly. "What with the Trollocs and the White Cloaks."
He shrugged.
"You know the Trollocs returned?"
Perrin nodded.
"Was that Aes Sedai right, Moraine? Were they after you three lads that winter night? Did you ever find out why?"
The Brown Sister gave Perrin a warning look. Alana appeared absorbed in rummaging through her saddlebags, but he thought she was listening now. Neither was what made him hesitate, though. There was just no way to come out and tell Tam that his son could channel, that Rand was the dragon reborn. How could you tell a man something like that?
Instead, he said, "You will have to ask Moraine. Aes Sedai don't tell you any more than they have to."
"I have noticed," Tam said dryly.
Both Aes Sedai were definitely listening and making no secret of it now. Alana arched an icy eyebrow at Tam, and Abel shifted his feet as if he thought Tam was pushing his luck. But it would take more than a stare to upset Tam.
"Can we talk outside?" Perrin asked the two men. "I want a breath of air."
He wanted to talk without Aes Sedai eavesdropping and watching, but he could hardly say so. Tam and Abel were agreeable, and perhaps as eager to escape Varen and Alana's scrutiny as he, but first there was the matter of the rabbits, all of which they handed over to Alana.
"We meant to keep two for ourselves," Abel said, "but it seems you have more mouths to feed."
"There is no need for this."
The Green Sister sounded as though she had said as much often before.
We like to pay for what we get, Tam told her, sounding the same. The Aes Sedai were kind enough to do a little healing for us, he added to Perrin. And we want to stock up credit in case we need it again. Perrin nodded. He could understand not wanting to take a gift from Aes Sedai. An Aes Sedai's gift always has a hook in it, the old saying went. Well, he knew the truth of that. But it did not really matter whether you took the gift or paid for it. Aes Sedai managed to set the hook anyway. Varen was watching him with a tiny smile as if she knew what he was thinking. As the three men started out, carrying their bows, Fael rose to follow. Perrin shook his head at her, and amazingly, she sat back down. He wondered if she was ill. After pausing so Tam and Abel could admire Stepper and Swallow, they strolled off away under the trees. The sun slanted westward, lengthening shadows. The older men made a few jokes about his beard, but they never mentioned his eyes. Strangely, the omission did not bother him. He had more important worries than whether somebody thought his eyes were peculiar. Responding to Abel's query as to whether that thing was any good for straining soup, he rubbed his beard and said mildly, Fael likes it.
Ho-ho, Tam chuckled. That's the girl, is it? A spirited look to her, lad. She'll have you lying awake nights trying to tell up from down. Only one way to handle that sort, Abel said, nodding. Let her think she's running things. That way, when it's important and you say different, by the time she gets over the shock of it, you'll have matters arranged as you want, and it will be too late for her to badger you about changing it.
That seemed to Perrin a great deal like what Mistress Alvir had told Fael about handling men. He wondered if Abel and Marin had ever compared notes. Not likely. Perhaps it was worth trying with Fael. Only she seemed to have her own way in any case. He glanced over his shoulder. The sick house was almost hidden by the trees. They had to be safe from the Aes Sedai's ears. He listened carefully, drew a deep breath. A woodpecker drummed somewhere in the distance. There were squirrels in the leafy branches overhead, and a fox had passed this way not long ago with its kill, a rabbit. Aside from the three of them, there was no man scent, nothing to indicate a hidden warder listening. Perhaps he was becoming too cautious, but good reasons or no, he could not get past the coincidence of both Aes Sedai being women he had met before. One, a woman Egwene did not trust, the other a woman he was not sure he trusted. "Do you stay here?" he asked, "with Varen and Alana." "Hardly," Abel replied. "How could a man sleep with Aes Sedai under the same roof? What there is of it."
"We thought this would be a good place to hide," Tam said, "but they were here before us. I think those warders might have killed both of us if Marn and some others of the women's circle hadn't been here then, too."
Abel grimaced. "I think it was the Aes Sedai finding out who we were that stopped it. Who our sons were, I mean. They showed too much interest in you boys to suit me." He hesitated, fingering his bow. "That Alana let slip that you're Tavirin, all three of you. I've heard Aes Sedai can't lie."
"I haven't seen any signs of it in me," Perrin said wryly. "Or Matt."
Tam glanced at him when he did not mention Rand. He was going to have to learn to lie better, trying to keep his own secrets and everybody else's too. But what the older man said was,
"Maybe you just don't know what to look for.
How is it you come to be traveling with an Ogier and three Aiel?"
"The last peddler I saw said they were Aiel this side of the spine of the world," Abel put in. "But I didn't believe him. Said he'd heard they were Aiel and Murindi of all places, or maybe Altara. He wasn't too certain of exactly where, but a long way from the waste."
"None of that has anything to do with Tavirin," Perrin said. "Loyal is a friend, and he came to help me. Gaul is a friend too, I suppose. Bane and Chiad came with Fael, not me. It's all sort of complicated, but it just happened. Nothing to do with Tavirin."
"Well, whatever the reason," Abel said. "The Aes Sedai are interested in you lads. Tam and I traveled all the way to Tar Valon last year, to the White Tower, trying to find out where you were. We could hardly unearth one to admit she knew your names, but it was plain they were hiding something.
The keeper of the Chronicles had us on a boat heading downriver, our pockets stuffed with gold and our heads full of vague assurances, almost before we could make our bows. I don't like the idea the tower may be using Matt some way.
Perrin wished he could tell Matt's father nothing like that was going on, but he was not sure he was up to that big a lie with a straight face. Moraine was not watching Matt because she liked his grin. Matt was tangled as deeply with the tower as he himself, maybe deeper. The three of them were all tied tight, and the tower held the strings. A silence descended on them until at last Tam said quietly,
"Lad, about your family. I've sad news."
"I know," Perrin said quickly, and the hush fell again, with each staring at his own boots. Quiet was what was needed. A few moments to pull back from painful emotions and the embarrassment of having them plain on your face. Wings fluttered, and Perrin looked up to see a large raven alighting in an oak 50 paces away, beady black eyes sharp on the three men. His hand darted for his quiver, but even as he drew his fletchings to cheek, two arrows knocked the raven from its perch. Tam and Abel were already knocking anew, eyes scanning the trees and sky for more of the blackbirds. There was nothing. Tam shot had taken the raven in the head, which was no surprise and no accident. Perrin had not lied when he told Fail these two men were better than he with a bow. No one in the Two Rivers could match Tam's shooting. "Filthy things," Abel muttered, putting a foot on the bird to pull his arrow free. Cleaning the arrow point in the dirt, he returned it to his quiver. "They're everywhere nowadays."
"The Aes Sedai told us about them," Tam said, "spying for the Fades, and we spread the word. The women's circle did too. Nobody paid much mind until they started attacking sheep, though, pecking out eyes, killing some. The clip will be bad enough this year without that. Not that it matters much, I suppose. Between White Cloaks and Trollocs, I doubt we'll see any merchants after our wool this year."
"Some fool has gone crazy over it," Abel added. "Maybe more than one. We've found all sorts of dead animals, rabbits, deer, foxes, even a bear. Killed and left to rot. Most not even skinned. It's a man, or men, not Trollocs. I found boot prints. A big man, but too small for a Trolloc. A shame and a waste."
Slayer. Slayer here, and not just in the wolf dream. Slayer and Trollocs. The man in the dream had seemed familiar. Perrin scuffed dirt and leaves over the dead raven with his boot. There would be plenty of time for Trollocs later, a lifetime if need be. "I promised Matt I'd look after Bode and Eldrin, Master Cawthon. How hard will it be to get them and the others free?"
"Hard," Abel sighed, his face sagging. Suddenly he looked his age and more. "Powerful hard. I got close enough to see Natty after they took her, walking outside the tent where they're holding everybody. I could see her, with a couple of 100 White Cloaks between us. I got a little careless, and one of them put an arrow through me. If Tam hadn't hauled me back here to the Aes Sedai..."
"It's a good-sized camp," Tam said, "right under Watch Hill. 700 or 800 men, patrols day and night, with the heaviest concentration from Watch Hill down to Emmons Field. If they spread out more, it would make things easier for us. But except for 100 men or so at Tower and Ferry, they've just about given the rest of the Two Rivers over to the Trollocs. It's bad down around Devon Ride, I hear. Another farm burned almost every night. The same between Watch Hill and the River Tarin. Bringing Natty and the others out will be hard. And after, we'll have to hope the Aes Sedai will let them stay here. That pair aren't too pleased at anyone knowing where they are."
"Surely someone will hide them," Perrin protested. "You can't tell me everyone's turned their backs on you. They don't really believe you're dark friends."
Even as he said it, he was remembering Senbui.
"No, not that," Tam said, "except for a few fools. Plenty of folk will give us a meal or a night in the barn, sometimes even a bed. But you have to understand they're uneasy about helping people the White Cloaks are chasing. It's nothing to blame them for.
Things are stone hard, and most men are trying to look after their own families the best they can. Asking someone to take in Natty and the girls, Harl and Alsbet, well, it might be asking too much.
I thought better of Two Rivers folk than that, Perrin muttered.
Abel managed a weak smile.
Most people feel caught between two millstones, Perrin. They're just hoping they aren't ground to flour between White Cloaks and Trollocs.
They should stop hoping and do something.
For a moment, Perrin felt abashed. He had not been living here. He had no idea what it was like.
But he was still right. As long as the people hid behind the Children of the Light, they would have to put up with whatever the children wanted to do. Whether taking books or arresting women and girls.
Tomorrow I'll take a look at this White Cloak camp. There has to be some way to free them. And once they are, we can turn our attention to Trollocs. A warder once told me Trollocs call the Aiel Waste the Dying Ground. I mean to make them give that name to the Two Rivers.
Perrin, Tam began, then stopped, looking troubled.
Perrin knew his eyes caught the light, there in the shadows under the oak. His face felt carved from rock. Tam sighed.
First we'll see about Natty and the others. Then we can decide what to do about the Trollocs.
Don't let it eat you inside, boy, Abel said softly. Hate can grow till it burns everything else out of you.
Nothing is eating me, Perrin told them in a level voice. I just mean to do what needs doing.
He ran a thumb along the edge of his axe.
What needed doing?
Dayan Bornhald held himself straight in his saddle as the 100 he had taken on patrol approached Watch Hill. Fewer than 100 now. 11 saddles had cloak-wrapped bodies tied across them, and 23 more men nursed wounds. The Trollocs had laid a neat ambush. It might have succeeded against soldiers less well-trained, less tough than the children. What troubled him was that this was his third patrol to be attacked in force. Not a chance encounter, not happening on Trollocs killing and burning, but meeting a planned attack. And only patrols he led personally. The Trollocs tried to avoid the others. The fact presented worrisome questions, and the answers he came up with gave no solutions. The sun was dropping. A few lights already appeared in the village that covered the hill from top to bottom with thatched roofs. The only tile roof stood at the crest, on the White Boar, the inn. Another evening, he might have gone up there for a cup of wine, despite the nervous silence that closed in at the sight of the White Cloak with a golden sunburst. He seldom drank, but he sometimes enjoyed being around people outside the children. After a time, they would forget his presence to some extent and begin to laugh and talk among themselves again. On another evening. Tonight, he wanted to be alone to think. There was activity among the 100 or so colorful wagons gathered less than half a mile from the foot of the hill. Men and women in even brighter hues than their wagons, examining horses and harness, loading things that had been lying about the camp for weeks. It seemed the traveling people meant to live up to their name, probably at first light.
Faran!
The thick-bodied 100-man heeled his horse closer, and Bornhald nodded toward the Tuathawan caravan.
Inform the seeker that if he wishes to move his people, they will move south.
His map said there was no crossing of the Taran except at Taran Ferry, but he had begun learning how old they were as soon as he crossed the river. No one was leaving the Two Rivers, to perhaps seal his command into a trap as long as he could stop it.
And Farn?
There is no need to use boots or fists, yes?
Words will suffice. This Rayan has ears.
By your command, Lord Bornhald.
The 100-man sounded only a little disappointed. Touching gauntleted fist to heart, he wheeled away toward the Tuathawan encampment. He would not like it, but he would obey. Despise the traveling people as he might, he was a good soldier. The sight of his own camp brought a moment of pride to Bornhald. The long, neat rows of wedge-roofed white tents, the picket lines for the horses precisely arrayed. Even here in this light-forsaken corner of the world, the children maintained themselves, never allowing discipline to slack. It was light-forsaken. The Trollocs proved that.
If they burned farms, it only meant some folk here were pure. Some. The rest bowed and said, "Yes, my lord, as you wish, my lord," and stubbornly went their own way as soon as his back was turned. Besides which, they were hiding in Aes Sedai. The second day south of the Taran, they had killed a warder. The man's color-shifting cloak had been sufficient proof. Bornhald hated Aes Sedai, meddling with the One Power as if breaking the world once was not enough. They would do it again if they were not stopped. His momentary good mood faded like spring snow. His eye sought out the tent where the prisoners were kept, except for a brief exercise period each day, one at a time. None would try running when it meant leaving the others behind. Not that running would get them more than a dozen paces. A guard stood at either end of the tent, and a dozen paces in any direction took in another 20 children. But he wanted as little trouble as possible. Trouble sparked trouble. If rough treatment was needed with the prisoners, it might raise resentment in the village to a point where something had to be done about it. Bayar was a fool. He, and others, Farn especially, wanted to put the prisoners to the question. Bornhald was not a questioner, and he did not like to use their methods. Nor did he mean to let Farn anywhere near those girls, even if they were dark friends, as Ordeath claimed. Dark friends or no dark friends, he realized more and more that all he really wanted was one dark friend. More than the Trollocs, more than Aes Sedai, he wanted Perrin Ebarra. He could hardly credit Bayar's tales of the man running with wolves, but Bayar was clear enough that Ebarra had led Bornhald's father into a dark friend trap. Led Jeffrem Bornhald to his death on Toman Head at the hands of the Seanchan dark friends and their Aes Sedai allies. Perhaps, if neither of the Luhans talked soon, he might let Bayar have his way with the blacksmith. Either the man would crack, or his wife would, watching. One of them would give him the means to find Perrin Ebarra. When he dismounted in front of his tent, Bayar was there to meet him, stiff and gaunt as a scarecrow. Bornhald glanced distastefully toward a much smaller collection of tents apart from the rest. The wind was from that direction, and he could smell the other camp. They did not keep their picket lines clean, or themselves. Ordeath is back, it seems, yes?
Yes, my lord Bornhald.
Bayar stopped, and Bornhald looked at him questioningly.
They report a skirmish with Trollocs to the south. 2 dead, 6 wounded, they claim.
And who are the dead? Bornhald asked quietly.
Child Joelin and Child Gamanis. My lord Bornhald.
Bayer's hollow-cheeked expression never changed. Bornhald drew off his steel-backed gauntlets slowly. The 2 he had sent off to accompany Ordeath to see what he did on his forays south. Carefully, he did not raise his voice.
My compliments to Master Ordeath, Bayar, and...
No compliments. Tell him, in these words, that I will have his scrawny bones before me now. Tell him, Bayar, and bring him if you must arrest him and those filthy wretches who disgrace the children. Go.
Bornhald held his anger until he was inside his tent, flap lowered, then swept maps and writing case from his camp table with a snarl. Ordeath must think him an imbecile. Twice he had sent men with the fellow, and twice they had been the only deaths in a skirmish with Trollocs that left no wounded to show among the rest. Always to the south. The man was obsessed with Emmons Field. Well, he himself might have had his camp there, if not for...
No point to it now. He had the Luhans here. They would give him Perrin Ebarra, one way or another.
Watch Hill was a much better site if he had to move to Tarn Ferry quickly. Military considerations before personal. For the 1,000th time, he wondered why the Lord Captain Commander had sent him here. The people seemed no different from those he had seen 100 other places, except that only the Taran Ferry folk showed any enthusiasm for rooting out their own dark friends. The rest stared with a sullen stubbornness when the dragon's fang was scrawled on a door. A village always knew who its own undesirables were. They were always ready to cleanse themselves with a little encouragement, and any dark friends were certain to be swept up with the others the people wanted gone. But not here. The black scrawl of a sharp fang on a door might as well be new whitewash for all of its real effect.
And the Trollocs. Had Pedro Nile known the Trollocs would come when he wrote those orders? How could he have? But if not, why'd he sent enough of the children to put down a small rebellion? And why, under the light, had the Lord Captain Commander burdened him with a murderous madman? The tent flap swept aside, and Ordeath swaggered in. His fine gray coat was embroidered with silver, but stained heavily. His scrawny neck was dirty, too, jutting out of his collar and giving him the look of a turtle.
A good evening to you, my Lord Bornholt. A gracious good evening and splendid.
The Lugard accent was heavy today. What happened to Child Joelin and Child Gomanis, Ordeath?
Such a terrible thing, my lord. When we came on the Trollocs, Child Gomanis bravely...
Bornholt struck him across the face with his gauntlets. Swaggering, the bony man put a hand to his split lip, examined the red on his fingers. The smile on his face no longer mocked. It looked viperish.
Are you forgetting who signed my commission now, Lordling? Pedro Nile will be hanging you with your mother's guts if I say a word, after he has the both of you skinned alive. That is, if you are alive to speak this word, yes?
Ordeath snarled, crouching like some wild thing, spittle bubbling. Slowly he shook himself, slowly straightened.
We must work together.
The Lugarder accent was gone, replaced by a grander, more commanding tone. Bornholt preferred the taunting Lugarder voice to the slightly oily, barely veiled contempt in this one.
The shadow lies all around us here. Not simply Trollocs and Murdrall. They are the least of it. Three were spawned here. Dark friends meant to shake the world, their breeding guided by the Dark One for 1,000 years or more. Randall Thor, Matt Cawthon, Perrin Ebarra. You know the names. In this place forces are loosed that will harrow the world. Creatures of the shadow walk the night, tainting men's hearts, corrupting men's dreams. Scourge this land. Scourge it, and they will come. Randall Thor, Matt Cawthon, Perrin Ebarra.
He almost caressed the last name. Bornholt drew ragged breath. He was not sure how Ordeath had discovered what he wanted here. One day the man had simply revealed his knowledge.
I covered over what you did at the Ebarra farm. Scourge them!
There was a hint of madness in that grand voice, and sweat in Ordeath's brow.
Flay them, and the three will come.
Bornholt raised his voice.
Covered it over because I had to.
There had been no choice. If the truth came out, he would have had more sullen stares to contend with. The last thing he needed was open rebellion on top of Trollocs.
But I will not condone the murder of children. Do you hear me? What is it you do that you need to hide from the children?
Do you doubt the Shadow will do whatever is needed to stop me?
What?
Do you doubt it? Ordeath leaned forward intently.
You saw the Grey Men.
Bornholt hesitated. 50 of the children around him, in the middle of Watch Hill, and no one had noticed the pair with their daggers. He had looked right at them and not seen. Until Ordeath killed the pair. The scrawny little fellow had gained considerable standing with the men for that. Later, Bornholt had buried the daggers deep. Those blades had looked to be steel, but a touch seared like molten metal. The first earth thrown on them in the pit had hissed and steamed.
You believe they were after you?
Oh, yes, my Lord Bornholt.
After me. Whatever it takes to stop me. The Shadow itself wants to stop me.
That still says nothing of murdered.
I must do what I do in secret.
It was a whisper, almost a hiss.
The Shadow can enter men's minds to find me out. Enter men's thoughts and dreams. Would you like to die in a dream? It can happen.
You are
mad. Give me a free hand, and I will give you Perrin Ebarra.
That is what Padron Niall's orders require. A free hand for me, and I will place Perrine Barra in yours.
Bornhold was silent for a long time.
I do not want to look at you, he said finally. Get out!
When Ordeath was gone, Bornhold shivered. What was the Lord Captain Commander up to with this man? But if it put Ibarra in his grasp... Tossing his gauntlets down, he began digging through his belongings. Somewhere he had a flask of brandy. The man who called himself Ordeath, even sometimes thought of himself as Ordeath, slunk through the tents of the Children of the Light, watching the white-cloaked men with a wary eye. Useful tools, ignorant tools, but not to be trusted, especially not Bornhold. That one might have to be disposed of, if he became too troublesome. Bayar would be much more easily handled, but not yet. There were other matters more important. Some of the soldiers nodded respectfully as he passed. He showed them his teeth in what they took for a friendly smile. Tools and fools. His eyes skittered hungrily across the tent holding the prisoners. They could wait for a while yet. A little while longer. They were only tidbits anyway. Bait. He should have restrained himself at the Ibarra farm. But Khan Ibarra had laughed in his face, and Jocelyn had called him a filthy-minded little fool for naming her son Darkfriend. Well, they had learned. Screaming. Burning. In spite of himself, he giggled under his breath. Tidbits. He could feel one of those he hated out there somewhere, south, toward Emmons Field. Which one? It did not matter. Rand Althor was the only really important one. He would have known if it was Althor. Rumor had not drawn him yet, but it would. Ordeath shivered with desire. It had to be so. More tales must be gotten past Bornhold's guards at Tarn Ferry. More reports of the scouring of the two rivers to drift to Randall Thor's ears and sear his brain. First Althor, then the tower, for what they had taken from him. He would have all that was his by right. Everything had been ticking along like a fine clock, even with Bornhold impeding, until this new one appeared with his gray men. Ordeath scrubbed bony fingers through greasy hair. Why could not his dreams at least be his own? He was a puppet no longer, danced about by Myrdral and Forsaken, by the Dark One himself. He pulled the strings now. They could not stop him, could not kill him. Nothing can kill me, he muttered, scowling. Not me. I have survived since the Trolloc Wars. Well, a part of him had. He laughed shrilly, hearing madness in the cackle, knowing it, not caring. A young white cloak officer frowned at him. This time there was nothing of a smile in Ordeath's bared teeth, and the fuzzy-cheeked lad recoiled. Ordeath hurried on in a slinking shuffle. Flies buzzed about his own tents, and sullen, suspicious eyes flinched away from his. The white cloaks were soiled here, but the swords were sharp, and obedience instant and unquestioning. Bornhold thought these men were still his. Padron Niall believed it too. Believed Ordeath his tame creature. Fools. Twitching aside his tent flap, Ordeath went in to examine his prisoner, stretched out between two pegs thick enough to hold a wagon team. Good steel chain quivered as he checked it, but he had calculated how much was needed, then doubled it. As well he had. One loop less, and those stout steel links would have broken. With a sigh, he seated himself on the edge of his bed. The lamps were already lit, more than a dozen, leaving no shadow anywhere. The tent was as bright inside as noonday.
Have you thought over my proposal? Accept, and you walk free. Refuse... I know how to hurt your sort. I can make you scream through endless dying. Forever dying. Forever screaming.
The chains hummed at a jerk. The stakes driven deep into the ground creaked.
Very well.
The Murdral's voice was dried snakeskin crumbling.
I accept. Release me.
Ordeath smiled. It thought him a fool. It would learn. They all would.
First, the matter of, shall we say, agreements and accord.
As he talked, the Murdral began to sweat.